Welcome to the Best Science Medicine Podcast, BS without the BS.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the 572nd episode of the Best Science Medicine Podcast. My name is James McCormack, and I'm a professor with the Faculty of Pharmaceutical Sciences at the University of British Columbia.
I'm Mike Allen. I'm a family doctor and the director of practice support at the College of Family Physicians of Canada. I'm also an adjunct professor at the University of Alberta.
And today we have back Samantha Moe, who's going to talk about RSV infections in infants. Now, for those of you who've been following along, we did an RSV infections in adults two or three months ago, I think. And here's why you guys come to the podcast. Infants are not just little adults. Did you know that, Mike?
I'm learning. I'm taking notes, James.
Yeah. So welcome back to the podcast, Sam.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm Samantha Moe, and I'm a clinical pharmacist by training, but now I work for the College of Family Physicians of Canada as a clinical evidence expert, so it's great to be here.
Yeah, and we love having Sam on that because I'm probably going to jinx the whole thing, but it always runs very smoothly when you're here because you know the stuff, and we give you very easy topics like vaccines.
Oh, man. This is not an easy topic, but no. You have two co-authors, Sam. We might as well
get that out
say them right up front because one shares your name.
That's right. So we had Sam Wong, who is based out of Alberta, and he's a pediatrician, and Mike Colbert as well, with part of the peer team.
And he just acts like a baby sometimes. No, I'm just kidding. We know Mike very, very well. So we talked about RSV infections in adults, and we gave you all the numbers, but now we're going to answer the question, how safe and effective are the monoclonal antibodies to prevent RSV infections in infants? And it's an important issue because it's in the news. People are sensitive to the whole vaccine thing. So why don't you sort of guide us through what the evidence shows?
Mm-hmm. So we wanted to look at, again, like the best systematic reviews or key randomized controlled trials. I mean, typically RSV causes like a mild illness with lower respiratory tract symptoms, but it can present as serious infections like pneumonias or bronchiolitis, and sometimes can lead to hospitalization in young infants. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to look at some of those outcomes. So the first one we looked at was palivizumab. And palivizumab was really the only prophylactic intervention that was available since 2002 up until recently. It's an IM injection that's given monthly for up to 5 doses, and it's given during RSV season. So we looked at some of the literature around that. If you're familiar with brand names, palivizumab is Synagis. Mm-hmm. And so the systematic review was 5 randomized controlled trials of about 3,400 infants. And there was 2 kind of dominant placebo-controlled trials. And one of them included infants born less than 35 weeks, or they had to have bronchopulmonary dysplasia, so like a chronic lung disease, or they were infants who had congenital heart disease. So these were like high-risk infants by virtue of being premature or having underlying comorbidity. So after 2 years, they looked at the outcomes in these infants. And so for hospitalization rates for RSV specifically, it was lower in patients who received palivizumab, so 4.4% versus 9.8% in the placebo arm. That's a relative risk reduction of 55% and a number needed to vaccinate of 19.
And I was going to say that sort of number needed to vaccinate or number needed to treat of 19 is, in the scheme of vaccines, is actually pretty decent from a number perspective. I'm not saying you should use it or not, but it all comes down because of the relatively high baseline risk in the first place. We've looked at things like, you know, the herpes zoster vaccine, and we're talking about, you know, number needed vaccine of, you know, anywhere from 60 to 300.
Yeah, depending on your outcome.
Yeah.
Exactly. And this is driven by kind of 2 things. You need a high baseline risk to get a better number needed to treat, but you also need a good relative risk reduction. Mm-hmm. Sometimes in vaccines, we call it vaccine efficacy. This is one of these tough ones, whether is it really a vaccine or what is it? So, but in this case, we are seeing about over a 50% relative reduction in a relatively high baseline, like around a 10%. So that's why we're seeing that number needed to treat. We don't see that with RSV in adults, but for those of us who practice, we know that there are times where it seems like the peds wards most of the kids in there have RSV. It feels like most of the kids in there are RSV, like the little guys. So it's something where you feel like you could make a difference, especially with hospitalization.
Mm-hmm. But that wasn't the only outcome that they looked at.
Mm-hmm. The other outcome was mortality. Mortality was not statistically different between the two groups. So 1.3% in the palivizumab group, 2.3% in the placebo group.
And for those of you who have really been paying attention, if you went back to our previous podcast where we talked about statistics. So in this case, you tell me what you would do with this, Mike, but I would look at this and go, it may not be statistically different, but at least, and I'm not going to use the word trend like you did in the previous podcast, Mike. But it's here's what I would, now I know. Here's what I would say. It's at least it's in the right direction.
Yeah, that's the kind of what we often say. It's in the right direction. There's no trend here because we don't in the TFP. We often don't put in the p values and all that stuff.
Yeah, and it's not necessary.
It's not necessary. This tells us that if anything, it's looking favorable.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, no. So that's and that's what we know about the one product that was available up until just recently. Is that right?
Yep, that's right.
So go ahead and tell us what the new kid on the block.
Yeah, so the new drug is nirsevimab, and the brand name is Beyfortus, and it was recently approved in Canada just in April 2023, or it got its notice of compliance. It's also a monoclonal antibody. It has a longer half-life. And so, therefore, a single IM injection can be given, and it's weight-based. And it was in these trials, so we'll talk about three trials. They were given, so single dose given either before RSV season or during RSV season. We have two trials that were versus placebo. And what you'll notice here is that these infants were healthier than the infants that were studied with palivizumab. So, for example, the first trial was in 1,400 infants. And they were premature, so they were born between 29 to 35 weeks. Their mean gestational age was 33 weeks, but they were healthy. And when they looked at the data at 150 days, hospitalization rates were lower in the kids who received nirsevimab. So 0.8% versus 4.1% on placebo. That's a relative risk reduction of 81%. And that's a number needed to treat of 31. They also looked at mortality after 1 year, and that was 0.2% in the nirsevimab group versus 0.6% in placebo group, and that was not statistically different.
And so kind of somewhat similar numbers, not exactly, but these guys are at a lower risk in the first place. Instead of having like a 10% baseline, these guys are at 4%. Yep. So, and in this case, and this is not a head-to-head comparison, but in this case, the vaccine was, for lack of a better word, 81% effective, whereas the previous one was 55%.
Yep.
Yeah. And again, the mortality going in the right direction. Correct. In a trendy sort of way.
I was just going to say, what I heard you say was in a dramatic trend.
Oh, it's it was a trendy trend process. So that was in premature, otherwise healthy, which is why the baseline was probably lower. And but there's been other studies
or trials. And you'll kind of see that true also for the next couple of trials too, where they're healthier infants. So the next trial we're going to talk about is known as the MELODY trial. And it included term or near-term infants that were healthy. So 3,000 or so infants. And 86% of them had a gestational age of greater than or equal to 37 weeks. So at 150 days, they looked at also RSV hospitalizations, and it was 0.4% for the treatment group versus 2% for the placebo group. And that's a relative risk reduction of 78%, a number needed to vaccinate or to treat of 63. Mm-hmm. In this case, there weren't that many deaths. After 1 year, there was 3 in the nirsevimab group, 0 in the placebo group, and none of these were attributed to either the drug or RSV itself. Yeah.
Although, again, looking at that I just go, huh, that makes me a bit nervous, but not necessarily nervous, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. You know that definitely doesn't have to be anything to do with a vaccine, but it's certainly a lot of people would clom onto that and go, well, or glom onto that, I guess is the right word, and say, oh, well, look at the deaths from the vaccine. The problem is it's not enough people to pick it up.
Yeah, to do. You can't, yeah, you can't. It would be difficult to do statistics on. Yeah,
exactly.
You can do it. You fudge the statistics. You make that zero death, 0.1 death.
Yeah, exactly.
It's ridiculous on the face of it, but that's how the statistics are done. But there won't be a difference there statistically. There's and that's the challenge with seeing numbers like this, is you're drawn in that there is a there's zero in one group and a few in another, mm-hmm. and you're like, oh, maybe this is saying something. But yeah, it's risky to make those assumptions.
Yeah, and just like it was with, it's risky to do the mortality stuff that we talked about in the previous ones.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
So for sure. At least there was more numbers there, though.
Yeah.
That makes me feel better, James. More of a trend, if you will.
Oh, very. Yeah. You're being very trendy.
I am.
Yeah. So there's one final piece of evidence, though, that you guys were able to find.
Yeah. And this was the most recent trial. So it's called the Harmony trial. And it was 8,000 or so infants. And 85% of them were born at greater than or equal to 37 weeks. Mean gestational age was 38 to 39 weeks. And at 3 months, so RSV hospitalization, 0.3% in the nirsevimab group and 1.5% group in the no treatment group, a relative risk reduction of 82% and a number needed to vaccinate of 82. And that was data at 3 months. This trial is still kind of, we're waiting for the final results to be published. So that 1 year data is forthcoming.
And that's almost identical data to the previous trial that you just mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very close.
Yeah. So, I mean, and it looks like, and I think there is a reason why this is happening. What you're trying to do is capture more infants, if you would, that might be, that you might want to use the vaccine in. Is you went from the people who, you know, very premature and then other medical conditions and then just premature and now healthy. And basically, if we were to do this podcast in 4 years from now, it's basically, should Mike and I get the vaccine?
Well, it will be that, but the interesting thing, Sam, correct me, but what was nirsevimab? What was the very first trial named? Because they're Melody, Harmony, and then.
Yeah, that one, I think they're called the nirsevimab study group or something like that. There wasn't actually a trial name.
Because I was like, there must be a theme in the brand name that I know you said it, but like that they're, it's musical or something.
Yeah.
The marketing of names is fascinating to me.
It
so.
Is. Yeah. And there was actually a trial called Medley, but that was all harms data, which didn't really show too much. Nice. So we didn't include it, but yeah, there's a theme for sure.
Yeah. The it just sounds like an Elton John song.
And why Elton? I'm just wondering.
Like, well, because I know I actually know a song called Harmony by him.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, so that's a
who's and, trendy now?
Oh, yeah. Well, if knowing Elton John is trendy,
I'm, yeah, it might be the wrong generation.
Yeah, yeah, so, I think I'm Generation A. and so, what about adverse events? Because we haven't really talked about that.
Yeah, adverse events, like they saw things like injection site reactions or fever and things like that, but really it was similar between palivizumab, nirsevimab, and placebo.
Yeah.
So not too much to talk about, pretty much, so yeah, similar. Yeah.
And that's always the difficult thing because we don't have long-term data.
Yeah.
And that's the argument that everyone's going to bring up. Well, what's going to happen in, you know, 12 years or 20 years or whatever? But then there was a little bit of some other limitations for these trials.
Yeah, these were industry funded trials. And that was kind of one thing to notice. And Mike Kolber kind of pointed out, you know, these is a little bit different in that the RCT authors in these particular trials, in some of them, were also shareholders or employees of the industry funder. So it kind of maybe takes it a little step further.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the issue is it's pretty much the people who do have to fund it are the people who are making it, in my opinion. But then you're right, when you get to the author. So, and here's one of the ways, I don't know about you, Mike, this is the way I hopefully reduce the bias, is I just read their conclusions for the sort of the humor
of it.
and then we do exactly, well, I don't do it because we just gave it to Sam to do and it was much easier. get Sam or someone to just give us the numbers and then we can discuss whether there's value to it. And not only that, we can then put it into the context. And I know you guys do that with that with that tools of practice.
Mm-hmm. So for our context,
pardon?
Oh, go ahead.
You go ahead, Sam. I was just gonna basically agree with James. It is like when you see the conclusion, I read the abstract out of, so it helps me frame the paper when I read it. I think I've said on the podcast before, I virtually never read the introduction or the conclusion of a paper. Yeah. It's not that I never do, but I rarely ever do. And I focus on the methods and the results, and mostly the results is flipping to the tables. And I think,
yeah. And that's why we've talked in the past, you can do decent evidence appraisal in just a few minutes for a trial.
Yeah, especially if you use the search function in a PDF.
Yeah,
like
exactly. That,
it's actually easier than the old paper versions.
Yeah.
Because you can search for words like allocation or randomization.
Exactly.
And blinding and all sorts of stuff. And,
yeah. So anyway, Sam, what's the context?
So the context is, so in Canada, RSV is responsible for about 2,500 childhood hospitalizations every year. And among that 2,500 who get hospitalized, about 80% of them actually have no underlying medical conditions. And separately, 80% are under the age of 2 years old.
Yeah.
But mortality is 2 out of 1,000.
Right. And we don't know if we affect mortality.
Correct.
Yeah. I mean, if it is 2 out of 1,000... Mike, help me with the math here, but the most benefit you could get is 2 out of 1,000.
2 out of 1,000, 0.2.
Yeah.
Yeah. The trouble is, James, and we've talked about this before, these are little people, and there's, we're even more aggressive. We want to.
Oh, yeah. And I'm not trying to make light of the number.
I'm just saying, one in a thousand little
kids is like, a billion times too many.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's kind of like, I can't remember the tools for practice we were reviewing where reduced infant mortality. And we said it's very hard to argue that.
Yeah.
mortality is important, but we've argued before that is mortality the right outcome when you're very old and frail and, you know, where quality of life might be more important with kids. This is
whereas mortality here is it's a big one.
It's a big deal. And I mean, obviously everyone listening knows this, but, and it's interesting that these numbers, the 2,500, Sam, like I remember being in training and I know that was a long time ago, 30 years, but, like there were so many hospitalizations for RSV. We don't hospitalize quite as much as we used to, but it was such a big deal. RSV season at one of the hospitals I worked at, there wasn't a kid. We had a small peds ward. It was only like 6 kids or something like that, a small section of the hospital, but everyone in there was RSV. And I remember when a kid came in with diarrhea, we were excited because it was something else. And we all felt very limited in what we can do, which is what makes this tools for practice so important, because there are getting to be things we can do.
Mm-hmm.
So keep going with the context.
Yeah, so the NICE guidelines do have recommendations for palivizumab. So they recommend it in high-risk infants. And so those would be infants who were premature. So they define that as less than 30 weeks. Infants who are less than 2 years old, but they have chronic or lung or congenital heart disease, or infants living in remote or northern communities who have difficulty accessing healthcare when they need it. So these are, and it's approved on a case-by-case basis provincially, and so, but usually these are the criteria that are followed in each province.
And we're not saying that's what we would, that's not necessarily a recommendation, we're just saying that's what is being recommended.
Yes.
Yeah, but you know, it's not far off.
Like, oh, no, I'm not yet. Yeah, no,
including
absolutely
the remote communities. Like, that's smart, because when this gets bad,
you know,
to evacuate someone, I think the call is a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. In terms of nirsevimab, so we are waiting for the NICE guidelines to come. And so right now it's April 2024, and I think we may see it come out in probably the fall of 2024. We do have, we're waiting for like availability and guidance and pricing in terms of how it's going to be available in Canada. There is a CADTH report that suggests that it may be, nirsevimab may be less costly versus palivizumab. And that's just based on cost effectiveness analyses that are available at the time of publication. But compared to the U.S., like looking at what the U.S. has done, it looks like it's likely going to be less costly than palivizumab. And in the US, what they're recommending for nirsevimab is for all infants less than 8 months going into the first RSV season. And for those infants who are high risk, that they also be treated for their second season. And those high risk patients are those 8 to 19 months.
Just actually don't know, what is the price of palivizumab?
So just based on some of the costs that we looked at, it seems to be about $5,000 per infant per year.
And that's a lot of money, Mike.
Yeah, I think it is. It is money, James. Thank you.
Yeah. You know, and I'm sure
it's a lot.
And I'm sure there's a bazillion economic evaluations of it, trying to show that it provides value and all that sort of stuff. Because, you know, hospitalization for a kid with RSV is not going to be inexpensive.
Well, a 5% in that first study, the 5% mm-hmm. reduction in hospitalization, I mean, as crazy as it sounds, as expensive as it sounds, that might actually approach.
Yeah. It's real tight. I'd say it's real tight.
Yeah. I think all of us see these kind of numbers and just feel and know that there is going to be a cost effectiveness analysis somewhere that's going to show this is cost effective. Yeah. Like that, because you can make those work to show what you want
exactly.
to show.
Yeah, no, exactly.
We could talk all the time about how we really we're all very frustrated, I think, by the increasing price, except the shareholders of the company.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is as mentioned earlier, it can be a serious illness, and feeling like you're, I think, you know, all of the things that go into it, we just feel like we can't do a lot for these kids. So,
I can comfortably say, it doesn't cost $5,000 to make it.
Yeah, you can say that because the company would not be selling it for $5,000. There was no profit. Yeah. So you can rest assured that that's true. Yeah, this is one of these things that we have in medicine, all of medicine, where we're kind of between a rock and a hard place. Yeah. And, you know, I remember reviewing these, James. I know you've been on similar type mm-hmm. work where you're asked to make a call about whether this should be funded or whether the price is appropriate. And these are not easy conversations.
No, not at all. And in fact, the main committee I was on one, I was never on a committee that had to decide on price, which I would have hated, because I would have just gone, you guys are just making this stuff up. Because it's so difficult. Well, you know, the only committees I sat on, does it actually have an effect and that sort of stuff. So that's sort of where we sort of stand with all that. So anything else, Sam, on that? Or I think we're a really good job. This is a difficult area to deal with, especially coming off the whole COVID thing and people sick mm-hmm. to death of vaccines and so on. Anything else you want to add?
Should we do the bottom line?
That probably would be good. Yeah, go ahead.
All right. So in high-risk infants, so those who are premature or they have the presence of a congenital heart condition or chronic lung condition, palivizumab does reduce hospitalization for RSV, and that's 4.5% versus 10% in the placebo group, using 4 to 5 doses during the RSV season. And nirsevimab, which is a new one, is one dose. It reduces RSV hospitalization in healthy premature infants, so 0.8% versus 4% in placebo. And it also reduces hospitalizations in term infants, so 0.3 to 0.4% versus 1.5 to 2% in the placebo group. And side effects look like they're similar to placebo.
Excellent. So great job as always, Sam, putting that all together, and also for your co-authors who helped you out with this one. Mike, anything else you want to talk about?
No, that's good. Just I will mention CFPC Learn. Sam and I both work on that diligently, mm-hmm. and it's available as part of this podcast is available on CFPC Learn. If you're a subscriber, you get, as long as you complete a short survey after the podcast, you get to have your credits entered directly. Each podcast is worth half a credit, and you get full access to all of the podcasts from BS Medicine, so including the premium ones. So something to consider.
And very quickly, our meme conference, our annual conference that we've been doing for 30 plus years, is coming up in Vancouver in May 24th and 25th. And if you're looking for information about it, we've got some really good speakers. Go to hectalks.com and check it out. We would love it if you would attend either live, which is a lot of fun. We try and make these things as fun as possible, or at least listen online. It would be great. So I think we'll just leave it at that. So thanks as always for listening.
Talk to you later.
Bye.